8:07, FM Talk 106.5 and Mobile Mornings. Glad to have you here on this Thursday. By the way, today, Thursday, is day 20 of the partial government shutdown. And as Kelly pointed out earlier in the week, will soon be the longest ever. The record stands at 21 days during the Clinton administration.
Correct.
So by Saturday, if this goes on, it will be the longest shutdown in record. We're talking about that throughout the morning and talking about it right now with AL1's Congressman Bradley Byrne. And thanks for being on the show. Thanks for your time.
Good to be with you.
I want to talk about a couple things here in the overarching and then get down to what you're working on right now for Coast Guard members and making sure they get their pay. But do you have any sense that you can offer us back here at home that there's any meeting in the middle? Or I mean, after hearing the reaction from Vice President Pence and Speaker Pelosi and Schumer, it seemed like yesterday not much was done.
Yeah, I think we're going to get into new territory after tomorrow, because tomorrow these federal employees won't get paid. And I think that puts a lot of heat on Democrats, because Democrats disproportionately represent federal employees. And I'm already hearing from the freshman Democrats that they're feeling an enormous amount of heat. So that's going to put heat on their leadership. Here's what happened yesterday. They were in the Oval Office. Pelosi kept saying, we're not going to negotiate with you till you open the government. And so President Trump said, all right, Nancy, if I open the government for 30 days, will you negotiate with me on border security? She said no. Well, that's not a negotiation, that's a capitulation. The president said that we don't really have anything to talk about until you're ready to negotiate, even if I take the, you know, open the government, until you're willing to negotiate, I don't know what there is for us to talk about. So he didn't storm out of the meeting. He tried to get her to negotiate. She wouldn't do it. There's nothing left for us to talk about. Now, that pressure is going to start building on their side, as I said. In the meantime, there is a bipartisan group of U.S. senators that are over there trying to figure out how to make a little bit of a grander bargain so that there's more in it for both sides. And maybe that attracts enough people from both sides to where we can get this thing off the dime. But, I've made it very clear, Sean. I mean, I think the president's in the right here. I know the national news media is never going to treat him fairly about this. I get that. And I think the man's doing the right thing, and I'm standing with him.
You know, Congressman Byrne, it seems like you just laid out, there's not anything, there's not a percentage of negotiation. I mean, if you have, the Democrats, Pelosi and Schumer saying reopen the government, and the president saying, okay, if I reopen it for 30 days, will we negotiate this? And the answer is no. Then, yeah, it's not a negotiation. I don't see where one side meets the other. It sounds like those two ends are as far apart as possible.
I've negotiated hundreds and hundreds of deals going back in my legal experience. I've never known a negotiation to work where one side says, I'm not going to give you anything, and the other side says, okay, I'm going to give up everything. I've never known that to work. And it doesn't work. I mean, that's just common sense. It doesn't work. So it's going to have to be pressure that builds up from down below Nancy Pelosi and her conference, and down below Chuck Schumer and his conference, for them to realize we're going to have to cut a deal here. We're not seeing any widespread defections among Republicans in the House or Republicans in the Senate. I'm beginning to hear real pressure and the possibility of defections on the Democratic side. So when it gets to that point, then that pushes Pelosi and pushes Schumer to actually get in the room and work this thing out with the president. This thing could be worked out in 45 minutes. It's not that difficult. What needs to be done, the president's put a very specific proposal out there in January the 6th. It takes into account a lot of Democratic requests. I mean, it's a very common sense, reasonable thing. I mean, it's just a matter of making sure that Pelosi and Schumer have got enough pressure from their own people. They say, okay, we got to reach a deal here.
Congressman, you're pushing a bill right now to pay the Coast Guard through the end of the fiscal year. Can you, first of all, lay out the situation with the difference in how the Coast Guard's paid with other branches of the military?
Yeah, the Army, the Air Force, the Marines, the Navy, they're all paid under the Department of Defense. Unfortunately, the Coast Guard is paid under the Department of Homeland Security. So we appropriated the money back in September for the Department of Defense. So everybody in the Army, the Air Force, the Navy, Marines, they're being paid. There's no problem at all. But because we didn't fund the Department of Homeland Security in September, Coast Guard's not funded today, which means they don't have money to make their paycheck. And their paycheck would be due on the 15th, not the 11th. So what my bill does, it says, okay, just for the employees, the personnel of the Coast Guard, we're going to provide enough money. We're going to authorize the payments of their paychecks and other benefits through the end of this fiscal year, because they're out there performing services and duties that are very similar to the Army, the Navy, the Air Force, and Marines, and they shouldn't be treated any differently just because they fall under a different department of government.
Looking at some of the people on Twitter talking about this, Mike says, while I don't disagree with you that no one should work without pay, the main reason is that the Coast Guard is contractually obligated to work without pay under the UCMJ. They don't have the option of quitting or walking away. They risk brig time if they don't show up.
Yep, that's true. And for all practical purposes, they are a part of the United States military. They're just not funded under the Department of Defense. They're funded under the Department of Homeland Security, and they're caught in this sort of weird situation. And we ought to take acknowledgement of that and treat them the way they should be treated, which is the same way we treat the Army, the Navy, the Air Force, and the Marines.
It's, speaking of this, Ben on Twitter asking, why the Coast Guard more worthy of pay than other government workers?
Well, because they're performing a function that's for the national defense. And I think anybody involved in national defense should be paid like other workers involved in national defense. Now, by the way, I can make very quickly the exact same argument for the CPB personnel and for these TSA personnel that are at our airports. And I think that there's some other congressmen working on pieces of legislation for those folks, and I would agree with that. If you're involved in national security, national defense, then we should be paying you for what you're doing.
Yeah, I think that as areas of government work that will resonate more quickly with non-government citizens, you know, that don't have a direct connection on a paycheck, I can imagine TSA, air traffic control, when those things, people aren't showing up to work and planes aren't flying, y'all are going to have phones ringing off the hook.
Well, remember, we fly. I flew up here the other day, went through TSA, talked to the TSA personnel. By the way, one of them told me, you tell President Trump that I stand with him even though I'm not being paid. So, I mean, yes, it's going to start impacting a lot more people than just members of Congress after tomorrow. And as it affects more people, those people will contact their congressman. Congressman will start feeling pressure. That pressure moves up from the rank and file to leadership. And that's when you're going to start seeing more movement from Pelosi and Schumer. Until then, they're sort of enjoying their time in the sun, although I got to tell you, their performance the other night in response to the president was terrible. I mean, they didn't look good, they didn't sound good, they didn't make any sense. So, I mean, if they're basking in the glory, they're basking in the glory of their very far-left supporters, because I don't think they look very good right now.
One of the things that gets reported out there, and I think it's worth having you respond to, that even yesterday, Speaker Pelosi, she said, listen, we offered a bill to reopen government on day one of the Democrats taking control of the majority in the House. We've already done this. We've done this, and the Republicans are the reason it's not getting done.
No, the president's made it very clear. He wants to reopen the government, and he wants, in reopening the government, to have adequate border security out there, or the next big step in adequate border security. And every president has done this, Sean. This is not new. Every president in the last three presidents have built border wall, have built fencing, have provided these other things for border security. It's just when Donald Trump is president, when the Democrats are saying, oh no, now it's immoral. Well, it wasn't immoral. Well, they voted for it and built these things in the past. It's just posturing on their part. And if the national news media was covering this accurately, it would be clear to everybody in America. But this is one of these very clear instances where the national news media is so very biased that they're not giving an objective presentation, not only of what's going on, but what it means in the context of how we've been handling this for the last 20 years.
Congressman Byrne, good morning. Kelly Finley here.
Kelly?
Hi. Question for you. So what do you think is going to take to get the government shut down over and us back to business?
Well, as I said before, pressure from the rank and file up to the leadership. But I think we may have to take this issue and look at something beyond just border security. We may need to look at some other parts of this immigration issue, which doesn't bother me at all. Now, I've been very clear, as you know, I've said this over and over again, I'm not for giving anybody amnesty. So that's not what I'm saying here. What I am saying is that the Democrats come forward and they say, well, we need more humane treatment for children and families that come across the border. Okay, let's talk about how we do that in a way that's in keeping with American law. So there's things we could, I think, reach an agreement on if they want to start broadening the issues that we're in dealing with here within immigration. But at the center of this has to be border security. And Republicans should not, nor should anybody in the public expect us to, give up on what we think is essential to providing for the security of the American people. And we had a police officer killed a couple of weeks ago by a deported and returning illegal immigrant. We have a young woman that was raped up in Shelby County by a deported and returning illegal immigrant. These are not abstract notions here. These are concrete instances where the security of the American people are threatened by our not having adequate control of our border. By the way, we know that there is an incredible amount of drugs pouring across that border. We know that there are criminal elements coming across that border. And we know that there are indeed incidences of where we have apprehended people who are terrorists or suspected terrorists at that border. And somebody says, well, it's not that many. Well, there are only 19 that committed 9/11. So it doesn't take that many for them to wreak havoc on the American people. So there's a lot at stake here, and we have an obligation in Congress to make sure we're doing what we're doing to provide for security. If we need to talk about these other issues to get to that, I'm happy to do it. I think the president's happy to do it. I'm just not going to agree to something that the president and the people around him who are charged with doing this on our behalf have told me, yes, that gets us more towards border security.
Now, this one, a tough question. I don't know if you could answer it for you, maybe not for all the other Republicans in the House, but Scott in Alberta asked, if y'all couldn't do it back when you had the majority, why do you think you can get this done now?
Well, remember, when we had the majority under the Senate rules, you still have to have 60 votes, and that does require Democratic help. So even though we could push a bill out of the House and did, as you know, before we left on Christmas break, I mean, even though we pushed it out, the Democrats in the Senate said we will not agree to it. And let me tell you what happened. Because I was here. Friday before Christmas, Thursday before Christmas, we pushed the bill out. Friday before Christmas, the Senate took up our bill. They worked on it that night with Vice President Pence. I spent the night here Friday night, expecting Saturday morning to get up, have a Rules Committee meeting so we could pick up something from the Senate. The Senate left. They just left. Chuck Schumer and them left. Nancy Pelosi left. They decided we're not going to come back. We're going to go take our Christmas break. We had nobody to negotiate with. We had to negotiate with the Democrats in the Senate to get to that 60-vote threshold. And you and I have talked about this a number of times, Sean. That's a real problem, that we had that 60-vote threshold in the Senate. So that's where we are. That's where we continue to be. We've got to work out a deal with the Democrats. And only when the pressure grows on them will we be able to reach an agreement.
All right, before we wrap up, I know we need to let you go. You're busy here, but remind folks, too, once again, this bill that you're pushing for, and this there's a lot of ears out here that that work with the Coast Guard, serve with the Coast Guard here. What is the bill, and what will this mean for them?
This bill would authorize and appropriate the money for all Coast Guard personnel to be paid in full through the end of this fiscal year, no matter what's going on with the government shutdown.
There we go. All right, Congressman, thank you for your time. Thanks for being on with us this morning, and we'll be watching what's going on in Washington and check back in soon.
Great to be with you.
All right, AL1's Congressman Bradley Byrne. I'd like to hear from you when we come back at 343-0106, 343-0106. I'll put you at the front of the line if you heard something yesterday out of Republican or Democrat mouths that makes you think there's some deal going to be struck by the end of the week. Y'all, call me with that nugget. I'm interested. All right, coming right back. A25 FM Talk 106.5 Mobile Mornings on this Friday Eve. Lil Friday. In other words, today's Thursday. We're just trying to doll it up. All right, to the phones, 343-0106, 343-0106. Let's go to David in Mobile first up. Hey, David.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
No problem. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, just a couple of things real quick. We're talking about this, the government shutdown, and we're talking about the people that aren't getting paid? Well, first of all, the first people that ought to not be getting paid right now is every member in Congress.
I think you get a big agreement from across the fruited plain on that one.
Yeah. One other thing is some of the employees, government employees, and I know this is hard to just blanket everybody, but a lot of them are out right now not working, and they're going to get retroactive pay if I've been hearing everything right.
That's right.
So it's not like they're going to be out of the money.
No, but in the short term,
right,
and I've been one that's said over the years, the reality of these, whenever there's a shutdown, they do get their money back. And it ends up, by the way, ends up costing we the taxpayers a little bit more to how they do that. But in the short term, you go a couple pay periods without a check. That's real world stuff. That's hard on folks.
Oh, yeah, I understand that. As a contractor that I am, there are times that doing weather, weather-related stuff, that it affects my business. And sometimes we've gone as much as 5 or 6 or 7 days not being able to work. And my employees, they don't get paid either. I mean, some of these people that are government employees, and don't get me wrong, I'm not getting down on them, some of them never miss a minute, regardless of weather or anything else. And there's nothing that says they can't go out right now and get a temporary job.
You know what, though, David? There is, and that's one thing I forgot to take up with the congressman. I will look into it. There is a certain portions of the government, if not all. I saw this pop up the other day, Dalton. Remember we talked about that during the midday or something, or Kelly, maybe we were talking about during the morning show, mm-hmm. that said they were not allowed to get a temporary job during the shutdown. And that's when I had one of my little berserk moments. I said, you got to be kidding me. You tell a man or a woman that they can't go work, but they can't go work? I mean, That's wrong.
And they want to work.
Yeah, it really is wrong there. And one more thing, and then I'll let you go then. It's about the border security. It seems to me that the reason that everybody's coming over, whether it's drugs or whether it's jobs or anything else, but one of the things that we don't do, and I'm a business owner, one of the things that we don't do is we don't prosecute the people that are hiring illegals, and we don't prosecute the people that are hiring illegals. And if that was to take place, I think there would be a mass exodus of people going back to their own country.
David,
I'm going to let you go.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Hey, thank you, David, and I appreciate that. And I completely agree with you there. That's why I've said for a long time, if you look at osmosis, whether you have something that's hot and something that's cold, they both become lukewarm, something that's wet, something that's dry. If there's no barrier in between, they both become moist. Same thing on the idea of migration across a border that is porous. If you're going to have a difference, in other words, the standard of living, I don't care how you cut it, is way better in the United States than it is in Mexico or Central America. As long as that dichotomy exists, you will always have the attempted flow of people across that border for just regular human emotions. Now, it doesn't matter what country they're from. That's a normal human condition. So one of the things you could do here in conjunction, I think this is incumbent upon Republicans, is to talk about tightening down on people hiring illegals at the same time you talk about constructing some physical barrier on the border. Look here, Mobile County Commissioner Jerry Carl joining us now. Hey, Jerry.
Good morning, Sean. How you doing?
We're doing good, man. So you got a little take on the shutdown here?
I did. I called in yesterday and I couldn't hang on long enough, so I appreciate you taking my call today. I want everyone to understand what border security actually means to us in this area. We fight drugs. Sheriff Cochran, I know you have him on there on a regular basis, but we fight drugs so hard in this town. And for somebody to take $5 and get a hit of meth, the reason it's $5 and not $10 is just the pure volume that's coming across borders. They're bringing this stuff in 55-gallon drums, and that is a lot of crystal meth. They're not selling crystal meth that cheap to make money off of it. They're selling crystal meth that cheap to get people hooked on heroin. We've got our clinics
those are
full.
Different
we've got halfway
drugs.
Houses mm-hmm. full. I just passed a legal meth office. I mean,
wait,
40 cars in the parking lot.
Sorry. Hey, Commissioner, I mean, you must be talking about, I got to do this. I got to run the news break because you said legal meth office. Probably opioids or something like that. Okay, we're up against a hard news break. Coming back, we'll continue a conversation here with Commissioner Carl. Also take a couple calls, and our buddy Rob Holbert from LandYap joins us. It's all straight ahead right here on Mobile Mornings. News is next.
8:35 here on FM Talk 106.5. This is Mobile Mornings. It's time to head over to McConnell Automotive and talk to Mitch McConnell. Hey, Mitch.
Good morning, Dalton. How's everybody doing?
Doing fantastic. So tell me, what's going on at McConnell Automotive? What is hot on the lot?
Man, I think, Dalton, the thing that everybody is excited about is the new GMC Sierra. And, you know, what I'm inviting everybody to do, Dalton, is check this truck out. Everybody loves a truck, you know, especially in Alabama. It doesn't matter if you're hunting or you're working, you just want to look cool. And I think it's kind of, if a Ford buyer or a Chevy or a Dodge or a Tundra driver, if they kind of had their wish list and said, GMC, here's what I would like to have in a truck. A bigger truck, standing bigger, more room inside, bigger, badder looking. If you're in a new GMC Sierra and you're standing at or sitting at a traffic light, if you look next to anybody, you got a bigger, badder truck, Dalton. So what I want to do is just invite everybody to come check it out. And really, we got some incredible deals. And just remind you, everybody, that the 18 models, we still have about 40 of them left. Huge discount. So you get to kind of pick your poison. So my biggest thing I want to tell everybody, Dalton, is go to the website, or better yet, come to Dolphin and I-65 at McConnell Automotive and check out what I think is the coolest, biggest, baddest truck on the road, which is the brand-new GMC Sierra. A lot of people don't even know it's out, and we have them in stock.
All right. Thank you, Mitch. Have a good one.
Y'all have a great one, Dalton.
That's Mitch McConnell. The website, McConnellAutomotive.com, or go see him and the crew at McConnell Automotive on Dolphin Street, just east of I-65.
All right, 836 FM Talk 106.5. Want to quickly finish with Mobile County Commissioner Jerry Carl. We were talking to him before we went to the news break. And also, Rob Hulbert's going to join us here in just a little bit. Commissioner Carl, you were saying, I'm sorry, we just got up against that news break. You were talking about the drugs, and you had talked about crystal meth, and you'd also talked about opioids. I just want to make sure we're clear on what you were talking about.
Yes, there are huge profits being made by the pharmaceutical companies in these drugs. But the first thing you have to do is get, and I'm not saying they do it, I'm just saying the profits that are being made. There's methadone clinics all over Mobile. You can go at 6 o'clock in the morning because they're getting their methadone before they go to work. And a lot of people are functioning through the day on this methadone. It started with crystal meth. It started at our borders. And if we don't grow up and start trying to find a way to stop it at the borders, if it takes a shutdown, if it takes a meltdown, whatever it takes, we've got to do it, because I'm tired of burying people. I've been to two funerals in the last month that are directly related to my family that drugs were involved in. One was killed in a car wreck by a guy on crystal meth. Another one was his son that did an overdose. And it's an epidemic. And it starts at the borders. People don't want to realize that, but it is. And there's so much profit being poured into these campaigns to keep this stuff moving. It's like we're wearing blinders. We're looking for a speck when the mountain's right in front of us.
There we go. By the way, too, keep your phone handy. I got to call you, get you on the show soon. There's a lot to talk about with the county. I want to get you on the show. So.
Oh, I'd love to.
All right, I'll be calling you soon. Thank you for your time. Mobile County Commissioner Jerry Carl checking in as well. All right, it is a Thursday. That means our buddy Rob Hulbert from Landyap joins us. Hey, Rob.
Good morning.
Morning, man. So you wait off into this? You want to wait off
border
into
security? Yeah, I think, I guess one of the things that frustrates me, Sean, and this is where we get into all this stuff along lines, you know, when we're debating issues, but other issues become part of it. There are always these concepts of let's separate these issues out and not have government shutdowns over something, you know, so that issue can be debated versus, you know, everybody being shut down and people being hurt in the process. So that, you know, I mean, I understand it's leverage, but by the same token, it does create a lot of problems, in my opinion, that, you know, that don't have necessarily anything to do with that particular issue. And, yeah. You know, I mean, obviously, border security is important, but, I guess to me, it just it ought to be able to stand on its own as an issue to discuss versus getting into shutting down the government.
Although I would just play devil's advocate for a second. If it was an issue they would have addressed in the past without having some kind of pressure component to it, they'd have done it. and they haven't.
I guess you can say that about just about anything.
You're right.
I mean, and it's, you know, if that's how we're
except for funding,
business,
they funded other stuff. Well, they get around. I mean, even though it's only a third of the budget, they get to make decisions on in the House. They do make decisions on spending money.
Back to the basics. I mean, if you really want to play devil's advocate, funding should have been handled by Mexico, right?
Yep.
So, you know, if you really want to get into playing devil's advocate, what we're dealing with is fighting over a campaign promise that, while I understand that there are a lot of people who say, you know, he's fighting for that campaign promise to handle border security, the campaign promise was made under the auspices of Mexico paying for it, and that is not happening.
You know, although you know this Rubik's Cube never gets solved when you and I start this stuff, but let me throw one more move here, then we'll get to some local news, is if the big Ed McMahon check showed up for $5.16 billion at the U.S. Treasury and somebody said, here you go, this is to build the wall, do not tell me that the Democrats would say, oh, okay, well, we're cool with that.
But then that's a whole different argument, Sean. That's a different argument. It's the same argument. At that point, it becomes an argument about them not doing what they're supposed to do with the money that was made available by Mexico to pay for this wall.
Because they have an idealistic point.
Can we just say it was a dumb thing to say in the first place?
I agree.
You know, it was when he first started saying it, I thought, this is idiocy.
Well, he was painting himself into a corner. I've been saying that.
He did that. And so now we're all in a corner, and the people who aren't getting paid are in that same corner with him. I think it then gets back into the arena of being political versus practical, and when you start getting into that arena, I don't really have a lot that I feel sorry for the president in that regard. I mean, it's, you know, this is a political fight. You and I can all sit down and say, yeah, you know, we need to have border security, and that's very important. But when you start making it about Mexico's going to pay for it, and this is going to happen, and now I look bad because that's not happening, so I'm going to do it this way, I think it becomes political.
Okay, let's get into something that's non-contentious, non-political,
that's really just an easy
story here. How are things working between the mayor and the city council right now?
Well, it's going great. There have been amendments to the lawsuit. It is now so large that it starts with the words, "Call me Ishmael." That's a Moby Dick reference to those folks out there who,
you could have gone Tolstoy, but yeah, I followed that one as well.
Well, I'd have to have read Tolstoy, but you know, that would, the complaint is now, you know, as thick as your wrist, and it's basically, you know, what we're getting more and more into is, you know, behind the scenes discussions about what they could do to one another and what could happen to each other and that kind of stuff. I think, once again, this concept that there's going to be some sort of that they're going to get together and talk this out is really not functional. And I don't know why the judge doesn't go ahead and get this thing done and make it happen.
May I add something? Good morning. Yes. It sounds like the two seriously are going through this divorce, and they refuse to speak to each other, and that's why, of course, a mediator is needed, because it seems like, you know, city council speaks freely to the media and lets us know, you know, what's going well and what's not, and it seems like the mayor is doing the same, speaking directly to the media, and each one is having to find out what's going on with the other side via the media. I mean, don't they work somewhere within arm's reach of each other? Can't they sit down and chit-chat?
They do. I think that, you know, Kelly, I think a lot of it, too, is just, you know, let's also not forget they keep complaining that the media is blowing it out of proportion.
Well, you're damned if you do, damned if you don't.
The work of the city is being done and this kind of stuff. If you can tell me that all this is going on, there's however many lawyers involved, and this is not hampering the business of the people. I know John Williams is dialing right now to tell you that it's all being done just fine, but I disagree. I don't think that things are happening the way they need to be happening.
So the retreat was a no-go, is what you're saying. It did nothing for relations.
Have we seen it happen? Have we seen this end? Have we seen it? I mean, the answer needs to be, somebody's got to tell them what their powers are. This is it. I mean, it just is the way it is. I mean, they need to know what their powers are. They are both arguing over the same powers.
Right. So this goes back to the semantic argument that I keep making, and I know you're hearing it, and Kelly's hearing it, and a lot of people are hearing it, but it sounds like it's not resonating beyond. I want this in, like you said, I want it in a court of law. I don't want a mediator. I want it in a court of law. I want it to go up the whole way through, wherever it needs to, so we get some sort of ruling of precedent. A mediation just gets people to agree. I don't care if they agree. I want to know who in the Zogby Act in our former government, who gets to do what? So down the road, when there's different members of a council and different mayors in our city, we don't have to rehash this crud.
Yes. So that you and I and Kelly, when we're old and decrepit and this happens again, can look at it and say, well, remember back in
it's already been answered. Yes, the question was answered.
In '19, they figured it out. We had this back then. It's already been settled.
Would this be better if we had a president?
I think it would be better if there was a council president. But I think
that versus an acting,
right?
Well, I think, and the reason I say that is because if we had a council president, it would mean we don't have the coalitions we have on the council. And people can say that again. Once again, they can say that it doesn't have any effect, but if there are factions on the council, within the council, that cannot even get past the concept of voting in a president and a vice president, they have an inability to work together. And that's just plain and simple. They cannot get past certain things. Then they have a blockage. They have a problem.
Let's do this, because this problem can't be resolved in just about 4.5 minutes. Can you hold on through the news break?
Absolutely.
All right, coming right back. More with Rob Holbert from Lanyap on Mobile Mornings. Just the first thing I'd like to hear some agreement on is enough of the mediator stuff. Take it to court. Take it to trial. It's trial time. FM Talk 106.5, Mobile Mornings. Kelly, Dalton, Dr. Bill, Kane with traffic. We're all here. Our phone number, text line 343-0106, 343-0106. Also hanging out with our buddy Rob Holbert from Lanyap. New issue of Lanyap out on the streets now. If people want to pick up the new copy, where do they hunt one of them?
Man, you can hunt them all over the place. There's about 1,500 locations in Mobile, Baldwin County. The regal purple boxes, still fairly regal, and then the more and more hideous pink boxes are still out there. We can also check us out online at lanyapmobile.com. You can have us delivered to your home for $1 a week. Go to the website, hit home delivery, we'll get you hooked up.
Yeah, go back to this with the drama. I mean, there are some analogs here between the president and the Republicans and the Democrats and Speaker Pelosi and Chuck Schumer as you look at the situation here at home. Not really the party politics as much as two sides that don't seem, although they will all both tell us that they are actually very close on a lot of things and getting the people's work done all the time. Maybe they are. I'm not going to sit here and say I know they're not because I don't have the facts for that. But it does worry me how much time is spent on, let me use a technical term, na-na-na-na-na-na from both sides versus doing things for the city.
Well, I mean, it's an expenditure of energy, Sean, and, regardless of what anybody says, when you expend energy on those things, you don't have it for other things. There's not endless time and boundless energy over at City Hall. People have things they have to do, and they have a certain amount of time in which they can do them, and if they are spending their time with lawyers and spending their time fighting over this issue, there are things that are not getting done. It's just the way life is.
Maybe Mardi Gras will fix this. Maybe the fun of Mardi Gras will fix this. We can hope. All right, I would have, go ahead.
We can only hope so. We can hope so. There is without malice, perhaps. But it really, it's just to me, time, judge, take care of this. Gavel this thing down. Let's get it done.
Yeah, one more time, just to be clear about what we've all talked about. The reason why, to me, the mediator does not reach the level it needs to, and it does need to go in a court of law. Just for me personally, and we'll see if roundtable everybody agrees. I want an actual decision, a legal rendering on the who gets to do what. Not that they agree to let one do something and somebody else. I want to know what the dang law is.
Yeah, I mean, this is, you know, it's not a marriage counseling type of situation. You know, it's not something where you go to the marriage counselor and everybody comes to the room, you know, we probably shouldn't have done that this time, you should have done this, and all that kind of situation. This would be a situation where somebody comes in and says, you know what, you can never do that again.
Yeah.
You're never allowed to do this again. This is your law. This is your boundary. You don't do this. And you know, people are going to walk away with hurt feelings. Some people are going to walk away probably not happy with that result, but they will have to live with it.
All right. I want to switch to a statewide story here and the subject of your column, Damn the Torpedoes, in the new issue. This has really been interesting to me, and I don't know if we're at the last story of these or not, but you say Alabama ground zero for political trickery. You're talking about these, the Facebook pages and Twitter feeds, social media disinformation campaign that came out during the Senate special election here in Alabama.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's, to me, this is sort of the beginning of this whole thing to, you know, we are sort of at the forefront of what is going to become a bigger and bigger and bigger issue. Not that it's already not an issue, but the issue of what's true, what's real. You know, we talk about, people have complained now for years about the fake media, the media is not telling them the truth. Let's get into the world of the internet where it's not even, you know, we're talking about things that are intentionally being set up to trick people, to pretend things are happening, to devise entire campaigns where it looks like one thing's happening hopeful result being that it drives certain voters, that it drives people you wouldn't think it would drive away. You know, you're trying to you know, in this case, they had one of them was the Dry Alabama, so it made it look like Roy Moore had a whole bunch of supporters who wanted Alabama to go back to prohibition.
Mm-hmm.
And the concept with that was that it would turn off moderate Republicans.
Yeah.
But you know, Sean, what's coming and is even going to be stranger, and you're probably aware of this, is deep fake videos and videos where people are being made to look like they are doing and saying things that they are not doing. Say, I bet you by 2020 that is going to become a very prevalent program where you're going to see these manufactured things put out in campaigns like this, and it's, you know, people are going to have the most difficult time sifting through what could be real, what could not be real. I mean, it'll even give people an opportunity when they do say something stupid to claim that they didn't do it.
Yeah, that's probably a whole other show's worth that we may do going forward. It is going to get a lot more, it already is at the level where it's a lot more advanced than the Nigerian lottery scam, right? We're talking about a scenario using CGI. You can have people's faces changed on bodies, doing things. You can cut audio and make them say, and so somebody can say, no, you're lying to me because I saw it. I heard that person say it. I saw them do it.
Right. Right, and what do you do with that? The vast majority of the electorate is not going to be sophisticated enough to look at this and say, "Oh yeah, that's fake, that's real." This, you know, nobody's going to. I mean, most of us aren't going to be able to look at that and determine if it's been faked or not. And it is going to become, I think, a major, major issue in this country in our political arena, in terms of how we, you know, what we know to be true or not. And I think the web, as always, the web just sort of seems to become darker and more devious all the time to me. And that sounds like I'm terrified of it, but it seems to be heading in a direction that leads toward more disruption and less truth a lot of the time.
You wonder, though, if you ever arrive at a point where Icarus flies too close to the sun. In other words, there's so much of it out there that people's natural reaction will be, not that it's something is true, but their natural reaction, default reaction will be, this is false, and in a way that protects from those things.
You would hope, but, you know, the thing, my guess would be what's going to happen first is that there will be efforts to police all this stuff, and, you know, which... There are lots of, as you well know in the radio business, there are lots of laws and boundaries as far as political advertising and political, you know, on radio, even in print, there are different laws about what can and cannot happen. And even with that, we have, you know, commercials that are basically bald-faced lies and people saying all sorts of things about each other. But on the web, there's nothing of that nature. And my guess is there will be attempts at that. But with that always comes the concept of, does it reach too far into what, you know, does it start getting into free speech and other areas like that? You always get into a dangerous zone doing that stuff.
There it is. Rob, once again, if people want to pick up the new copy of Lanyap, they can pick it out, pick it up on the streets. They can also have it delivered.
They can, and it's a great thing to do. It keeps you from having to wander around on the streets. And also, you know, it helps us keep this fine journalism going. You know, that dollar a week, that's less than half a Diet Coke. You know, it helps keep this thing going. It helps us keep doing the news and here in town, and, you know, and trying to be the newspaper for Mobile. There's a great story Jason Johnson has about some good successes in our school system. It's good to read. So go out and check it out.
All right, Rob Holber with Lanyap, and we're wrapping up for today. See you at noon today for Midday Mobile. Remember, podcast available. Voting for our When the Shutdown Ends. Three big things and a whole lot more. Front page of FMTalk1065.com. Y'all go get on it.